Welcome back, everybody, to the Humble Coach Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Park, and you're very welcome back to the show. Hope everyone's doing really, really well today. Folks, we're on episode number 61, and in this episode, I had a really great pleasure of talking to Michael Milan. So Michael is the head of Academy Sports Science at Leyton Orient Football Club. Folks, we had a really, really great chat today. It was great to have Mike on, so hopefully you guys enjoy the show. I'll chat to you soon.
Welcome back to the Humble Coach Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Park. We are up on episode number 61, and today I've had the great pleasure of being joined by Michael Milan. Mike, thanks for joining me, man.
No worries. It's been a pleasure. It's a pleasure. And Paul, I just want to thank you for inviting me on. It's been fantastic.
It's all good. No, so I was really, really pleased when you touched base with me there recently enough about it. And I think that we'll talk a bit more about how we kind of get to know each other in the first place and where that kind of stemmed from. But could you give us a little bit of a spiel about your background in coaching and kind of how you got into it even? I suppose I'm very interested more and more with everybody you talk to about how they got into their profession. And we can all kind of go, okay, well, I've done this and this and this, but I suppose the trigger to get into coaching is always an interesting one. So could you give a little bit of a chat about that?
Yeah, so I suppose for everyone out there, you'll hear the accent straight away. I am not from England, basically. I'm Cork through just out of the city. So Passage would be the area, and like Passage would be your junior GA club back home. So typical childhood, like sporting family all the way through. So basically you got I got a sister and two brothers, like family all played sport all the way through. Went to school, soccer, everything was done. And I suppose it was probably in secondary school read that the idea of like potentially looking at fitness tend to kick in a bit more. So it was my transition year. So I'd be fourth year. So I got work experience at a leisure center. And kind of like that kind of stemmed the idea of fitness into me, really. And then after that, I was looking at courses around the place. I was looking at UL, I was looking at UCC and CIT. And then I didn't actually get the points for UL at the time for sports science. So then I actually looked into the recreational leisure in CIT, and like it was a fantastic course, to be fair. Like I got sports massage from it, and I got my personal training from it, and I got a business degree from it. So it was fantastic. And then like during that time in CIT as well, I was dabbling a bit of coaching also as well on the side. I was in America for a summer coaching, and everything was based around coaching. Really. It wasn't purely S&C coaching yet, so to say. So I was PTing in a gym in Carrigaline Court, the Carrigaline Court Hotel. So I was doing a bit of PT and gym instruction there at the time. And then kind of probably for 3 or 4 months into the job, I was kind of realizing, right, I want to work kind of full-time sport because, you know, the internet is such a powerful thing. You kind of start scrolling around and see what else is going on. So probably about 3 or 4 months that gig, I was looking at kind of how to get into like the top end sport, the elite sport. And at the time, there was no like Setanta Sport. There was no like master's degrees in Ireland, to my knowledge back then, in regards to S&C or like high end sport. So then I ended up traveling over to London, where I'm based at the moment here, and did my master's at Middlesex under Anthony Turner and Chris Bishop at the time. So Turner was leading the program at the time. So I did my master's under two lads. So like fantastic master's, if you're ever recommending it, it was brilliant. It was top notch, to be fair to him. And then it was at the end of the master's, I was actually planning on coming home. But then what happened was I was applying for internships and jobs over here, over there as well, which would be here, obviously, in London. And I was actually at home at the time. I was at home for the summer. So I graduated. I went home for a summer. I applied for a job with Sutton Tennis Academy, which is actually gone now. They've disbanded. And I got an internship with Sutton Tennis Academy. So I took it and came back over, and I was there for about 2 years. So I worked with like four fantastic coaches there at the time. It was Henry Singh, Henry Jones, Ollie Falls, and James Farr, Arjun. And they were like, it was like five of us SC coaches. It was fantastic. I learned so much. And like, It was like youth development as well, which is fantastic. But we're at the bouncy ideas offshore, which is brilliant. Like, and I learned a lot from being at Sutton. And one thing I probably learned from that was, like, your master's gives you so much, but then when you're out in the field or in the trenches, it's totally different what you learn in your master's. I find, like, some things you can apply and then some things you can, and then there's some things you learn on the job and then other things you learn in your master's. But definitely my experience at Sutton was fantastic in regards to the learning experience. Then I did a little bit of the GA over here because I was obviously working in some of it back home as well. So I worked from the clubs here based in London. I was involved with Kieran Neely's London Senior Footballers. It would be 3 years, you know, this day, I think it was three seasons ago. Yeah, so I was involved with him for one season. And then I got a gig with UEL, so University of East London, the collegiate side, with Big Duncan over there at the high performance section. So I was working with him for about 2 years. And then I got my role I am in now with Leighton Orient Football Club. So I just head up the academy side of sports science with my myself and Louisa Walsh. We both head up the SSC side of things, the academy. And it kind of brings up to today, really.
Sweet. So that's I think it's a great thing that I suppose more and more, like, so many coaches I talk to have, and I'm in the same boat, we have such varied experiences. I think it's probably one of the best things that we can do as coaches is have that varied level of experience coming up. I think that's probably one of the more challenging parts, is if you're just a one sport coach from day dot to the top, you might, like, don't get me wrong, there's huge validity to that too, but I think there's a much bigger awareness of the applicability of your skills and the actual potential for playing around in different sports, the more varied of an experience you have. And like you mentioned, there's a couple of ones in particular there, like having the few lads at Sutton, I had a similar experience before in a gym I was working in, and the ability to shoot the breeze with really good other coaches it's invaluable. Like, it's really, really serious.
Oh, stop. It's unbelievable. And it kind of, it goes on to the kind of networking side of things as well. Because I find myself, like, I've been through conferences and stuff. Like, I do learn a bit from conferences, but the main thing, how I learn, is basically, like, us having a chat. It could be over a coffee, or it could be over a pint. It could be over just having and just letting it go and see what happens with it. Because what I think to find is, like, when you go to these, like, formal events and stuff, you really want to get the kind of nitty gritty of it. So sometimes you don't have to scratch the itch, so to say. Whereas if we talk, like, here, like we are now, or you mean our coach is just, like, sitting down with a coffee, you can really kind of, as I said, just get out on the floor, go, right, I do this, you do that. All right, how can we do something else better? Yeah, yeah. And, like, that's the thing I love about it, is just being able to be open and just chat away, really, and just see what you get from it.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the biggest things. Obviously, there's a huge amount of general sensitivity when it comes to S&C, or it comes to sports science and things like that. I think it's becoming better and better now, obviously, with more openness and more open-mindedness towards, like, be it data sharing or knowledge sharing and the whole lot. But I think you're right. It makes it so much better because it's interesting. We'll use soccer as an example. And there's lots of different ways you can coach or you can train soccer, but it's still the same game. So you have to have, there's a shared madness to it anyway. So you're going to have to find different angles, really. And it's more a case of just, it's not that you disagree completely with somebody's methods. It's more you disagree with their angle that they're going at, if you know what I mean. And especially when it comes to, like you mentioned, you're with the academy in Leighton Orient, you have to, it depends on what you get into the academy and then what you're producing forwards from the academy. And you're in an interesting kind of position. So what kind of age groups are you working with at the moment?
Yeah, so just for the listeners on, if you're not too sure how academy football works, I'll just break it down quicker than you. I'll paint a picture on it then. So with academy football, basically it runs from under nines up to the under 23s, really. That's your age group, really. And then it's kind of broken into three sections. So you have first is your foundation phase, which is like the baby, so to call it. So that's from under nines, under 11s. So that's one section. Then in the middle, then you have your YDP, it's called, or your youth development phase. And that runs from under 12s to under 16s. And then you have your PDP, which is your professional development phase, that runs 18s and 23s, really. Some clubs will have 23s, some won't. So, for example, with us, Leighton Orient, we actually don't have a 23s, we just have a U team. So, a U team is kind of technically, we have first years and second years. So, our first years would be under 17, really, if you think about it, and our second years would be under 18, but it's just categorized under the U team, really. And for myself, so this would be my third season at Leighton, and previous two seasons I used to have the whole thing, so basically under nines all the way up to 18s. But I had fantastic help from Louisa last year and this year. So Louisa Walsh, she came aboard full time this year, and she's been an absolute godsend. She's like taking so many hours off me that way. She's just taking, so she leads the foundation phase and the YDP at the moment, and I just need a PDP, and she take it by the bull of the horns, fair enough, and she leaves off a lot of workload off myself, so I can focus more on the PDP, which has been brilliant. And we just same idea, we tend to just bounce ideas off her at work, which is great.
Super. So I think that's an interesting insight, I suppose, and that's where the importance of nuance becomes more and more vital as you get further and further up the age groups. But I think at the same stage, it's more interesting, and and we're hearing more of this more and more recently, as in you get your best coaches to work with your youngest age groups so that they can actually get the most development, or they can at least accelerate their development or get the fundamentals really well intact from the word go. And I think that's where it's obviously in your situation that you have spent some time developing them, so you're the best coach developing them, and then you're able to actually carry those same kind of age groups on. So that's where I suppose, is there some of the players that you would have been working with when you started, and then you're actually now seeing kind of some of the fruits of the progressions, things like that, or is it still a bit on the early side for that?
Yeah, I suppose, so for myself, so I would have came in 3 years ago, when our first year scholars now, so they'd be under 17. So I would have came in when they're under 14. So they would have done under 14, 15, 16, 17. So, yeah, so 14, 15. So I am seeing them come in now. And I have noticed myself that they tend to be better movers. So the issue we have with Leighton Orient, and a lot of it comes to the academy ourselves. So we're a Cat 3 academy. So I probably explain the category system as well. Basically, you have four categories in football. It comes under the EPPP. So basically, you've got Cat Ones. So your category one clubs, which are basically your Arsenals, your Chelsea's, West Ham's, and then you have your Cat Twos, which would be the next category down, and then that would be like Crystal Palace, Millwall. All right, I'm giving all London-based examples here. And then your Cat 3, then it'll be, we've come under a Cat 3 academy, Wimbledon will be Cat 3, Stevenage, Peterborough, all these clubs will be a Cat 3 club. And the major differences in regards to your categories, basically like what equipment you have, like what staffing you have, and obviously like the Cat 1 did have a lot more staffing, a lot more money, so they can put more into your academies, and whereas the Cat 3s will have less staffing and so forth. So the major issue we have as a category council, we struggle to get any gym support for our YDP phase and our foundation phase. We get no gym support. It's quite struggling. It's quite a difficult thing to do. So we do basically on field lessons, really. So one thing I have noticed now, our first is coming in, which kind of goes back to the start of this question, really, is that they do tend to be better movers coming in the door. So we are able to tend to load them up on the bar, put a bar on the back quite early in comparison to the other years I've been here. So, which is a good thing. But it's still that needs to be supported more with gym if it's possible. We're building it. It's definitely, like since 3 years ago, it's a building block. And Just even having Louisa and extra staff. So before it was just myself, and then it was myself and we had an intern in last year. Now it's Louisa, myself. Obviously this year we're struggling interns in because of COVID issues. So this year having like two full-time staff members in the SSC department in the academies helped massively.
That's a huge, huge point, because when you're in that challenging enough position as it is, and then the last year kind of kicks in and you're like, oh, right, this is you've essentially been training for this, unfortunately, for a while. Like, you've been nearly in this kind of mentality, you know what I mean? You've been minimalizing things a little bit, and you had to be quite streamlined and quite efficient in what you've been providing coaching wise and S&C wise. So could you talk a little bit, I suppose, about what you would have, I suppose, any of the major changes that you've had to make? Obviously, everybody's had to make significant changes in regards to their production value, I suppose, nearly, if that makes sense, to their coaching sessions or their S&C programs or whatever. Is there any particular big things that you have had to change, no matter what, but you've also found huge success in? As in, do you think it's actually been really, really good that you nearly, like, it's almost that it's good that you have the experience of having low enough tech approach in the last number of years, so that now that's able to be maintained, if that makes sense, over the last while? Can you talk a little bit about that, Mike?
Yeah. And that kind of goes, being like coming through Catchy Academy, basically you have to do everything. You're a generalist, like, you're not a specialist whatsoever, and you create, as Epstein says, the range idea. So you're basically the GPS guy. If you have GPS, we've been lucky to have GPS for 2 years now, so like, thank our account manager for getting, he really pushed that last year to get it in. So I'd like to thank him for that, to getting it in, and our board, our club, for just basically being open to have GPS, because it's a massive bonus for us. You have to look after GPS, you have to do the warm-ups, you're the everything guy fitness-wise, GPS, warm-ups, gym, nutrition. So like, you cover all the bases, you have to come in general. So like, from an experience point of view, I think it's fantastic. And and that's why, like, people, like, students coming out now, I'm going a bit of a spiel now, where the way I'm going with this.
Go for it.
And the idea of when students come out, and I was the same. I was like, all right, I want to work at the top level. I want to be like Cat Ones, or I want to be at like, not Cat Ones, like a first team level. But a lot of the times you won't get exposed to a lot of things that you may get exposed lower down levels. So for example, like, there's no reason why students who come out of uni, or even during uni, undergrad or masters, can't get experience from a non-league football team, because you can apply the same principles. You could basically run their S&C department. Right, technically they may not have an S&C department, but if you come in, you can say it is an S&C department and you can lead it, which is fantastic, and you can run everything that way. Because no doubt, if you email a non-league club or a club on the levels, and you go, right, I'm Michael, I'm doing my second year degree in sports science or S&C, and I want to get some experience, I'm willing to come in and basically do all your S&C for you. All right, you may not get paid, but it's coaching experience in the day. And like it or not, you need to get experience before you come out of undergrad. And that's probably one thing. If anybody takes anything away from this, it's basically you need to get experience before you come out the door, or your undergrad, or your master's. You need to have experience, because that defines the differences. All right, we talk about the badges as like the UKCA and the CSCS. They are very important. You need to get them. But from experience, I do think you should be taking the experience box early on your undergrad if it's possible. And there's no reason why you can't, to be honest.
No, that's a huge point. I think, and I know we've spoken before a little bit about, and I'm sure some colleagues have as well, that everywhere has a potential S&C department kind of waiting to happen, if that makes sense, or at least a sports science department waiting to happen. And I think it's just changing the mentality. Like you mentioned there, there's a skew sometimes from those kind of students, I suppose, well, this is the hard part, really. If you're a student and you're coming out of one of those degrees or masters or whatever it is, and your eyes are obviously set on the big time, and you're kind of like, maybe just had this misconception of what the actual big time is, if you know what I mean. Like, there's some extremely, extremely famous non-league clubs that if you were involved in them, you would easily be in the limelight for further progression as it is. So it's just a case of making sure that you have the right level of experience, and you have the right, and we'll talk a bit more about this later on, but you have the right network approach to it. You know what I mean? But I think a huge amount of it is, like you said, it's when you come out of something like that, you have a huge amount of available knowledge that can be applied pretty directly without having to be only biased towards a particular size of a club or a particular first team environment or whatever it is. It could be pretty much based towards any of these high level sports, like you mentioned, even if something like tennis or whatever it is. Like, there's a huge amount of potential for something like that. Like, and that's where I think there is going to be huge scope in the next few years for graduates to go into that type of a place rather than just be expecting miracles to get to the top end, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, like, a lot of people think, oh yeah, you work in elite sport, you got to train slightly differently. All right. A lot of times you don't. I don't think you do. You really don't. Like, so for example, there are individuals in the day, like, I was PTing in a gym group for over this time. So I was, as a PT in London, in Colindale, Northwest London, I was PTing all through my time before I came to my, so basically this gig I'm in now, Leighton Orient, is my first full-time gig. I was PTing up to that stage. And how I programmed was very, very similar. How I programmed my PT clients to how I programmed my UEL athletes over at the university. Like, and for me, this goes back to the idea of like clearing out the clutter and just doing the basics right. Can they squat? Can they hinge? Can they push? Can they pull? Can they press? Can they roll? Can they do all their movements correctly? And then can they jump? Can they sprint? All right. And then like core work, so brace and rotation to come into it after. But like for me, a lot of people kind of get like wound up with the hype of elite sport, but a lot of times it's just being doing the basics and doing correctly and making sure they're being consistent with it is the key thing for me personally.
Yeah, and I think like I will kind of bring into this now, I suppose, the, and this is a nice kind of caveat. So I suppose in the last while you've kind of had a bit more of an interest in stoicism and minimalism, and I suppose that approach kind of works exactly like that, with that mentality of I suppose with the awareness of what's appropriate for the vast majority of people that you've been working with, PTs and like very high level athletes and also regular people, but knowing and I suppose having confidence that that level of basic approach can be applied exactly to whoever's is in front of you, because we are all in the same kind of boat, like obviously some of at different levels of experience and exposure, but still people and still needing progress at a certain level. Could you talk a little bit about, I suppose, kind of how you got into stoicism and minimalism, and then how that's kind of helped impact your approach to the kind of current madness, and has it made you a bit calmer and a bit easier to stay confident and organized in your approach?
Yeah, so I suppose it probably goes back, like before we carry on, I'm still learning a lot on stoicism, like, so I would consider myself a beginner still. But probably started about three years ago, actually relatively soon after I came over to East London. So I was based in Northwest London, got the job here at Leighton, and then myself and my partner moved over here. So it kind of began from just basically kind of looking on YouTube and stuff, and looking at ideas and stuff. And then we kind of came across this lady called Amy Landino. And she's on about this idea of stoicism, like being calmer and being happier as an individual. And then we kind of looked into it more, like I watched some videos, and then you go through down the loophole or a wormhole, so to say. And then we came across these guys called the Minimalists. And they like since day one, it kind of blew my mind, really, to be honest, because their idea was so simple. It was like, you don't need as much as we need in life in anything. We just like, we always tend to clutter our lives up with too much stuff and we don't realize what's really important. And that clicked with me a lot, because at the time, like a lot, many of us probably do, like we tend to be on our phones a lot with social media, and there's just so much coming in, like, and then we don't realize what's really important and what's not important. And then with them, they made me kind of realize going, how, and you always kind of relate back to your job, as I was like, all right, how can I apply this to my job? Because I do believe in the basics. So it kind of linked. So I do believe in cutting out the clutter in regards to the gym sessions we do, and making sure you do the proper technique. Because, you know, if you go on Instagram at the moment or any other social platform, you can see a lot going on at the moment. Some of it's fantastic, some of it's not so fantastic, as we know. So my idea behind it then was to make it kind of link together that way, as we're like, they kind of believe in doing the basics and like living a very simple life. And I kind of believed in doing the sessions we put on, making very simple and making sure people understand and make sure the basics correctly. So that's how we're kind of linked together that way. And then, like, also as part of that, I did read a lot also as well. So they are like, Stoicism is basically like mastering, like self-development. So that's another thing that kind of drew me to the idea of it, the philosophy of it. That's their school of thought, is the idea of always try to make yourself better every day and try to like, create value for other people also as well. But the key thing is just try to be a better person every day in everyday interactions, really. So that's what kind of got me into it. So as I said, I'm still learning a lot. Like, I'm still trying to read as much as I can into it. So I don't know that much in compared to what's going on. I know it's centuries old, the school of thought, but yeah, I'm still learning a lot in it. So I would be quite amateur in regards to my learning so far, but it's getting there slowly.
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic mentality and approach to become interested in, and I think it's a very apt one for our current time, and especially when, well, in a situation like you're in with an academy kind of team to play with and stuff like that, like there's a huge amount of development still ongoing. So I suppose a lot of people will look at, and I suppose we'll talk really high level, like Champions League soccer for the crack. And you look at players like Giovanni Reyna, you look at Bellingham, you look at all these guys who are very, very young, like they're 16, 17 odds, and they're playing at the highest level, fine, but they're outliers for the majority of the numbers that we're talking about. So, and they're still hugely developing as it is. Like they're scoring here and there, and they're having some great games, but they're still very much bottom of the rung compared to some of the real, real professionals out there. But when it comes to the likes of a club academy, albeit a potentially lower level than some of the Premiership teams and things like that, it's still extremely, extremely serious players that you're involved with, and huge potential for development and huge potential for very, very long and excellent careers. And it's a case of just setting them up correctly mentally for it. And I think having a coach as conscientious about it and as progressive about development, self-development, and even just I'm sure that approach, that even the interest in it has changed your demeanor, potentially even with your partner or with your family or with your friends. Has that changed much, do you think, Mike, in the last while? Has it made you a bit cooler in camera?
Yeah, so probably the two main things I probably picked away from it is like being a lot more calmer at work. I'm not saying I go off on a tangent at work or anything, but just kind of realizing, all right, if something happens, just take a minute, take a moment, and don't fire back. Just taking that extra 2 or 3 minutes to settle yourself. And then as the day is that you don't react, you tend to just take a second and respond appropriately. So if anything happens at work, then you pull the individual aside or whatever. Or if the lads are like joking around or messing their warm-ups, like everyone does, they all do, like, and I suppose like people like myself as sports scientists, S&Cs, I think people fail to realize that these are 16 or 17 year old lads. And because they have the uniform on, they have a jersey on, you just think, right, they've got a jersey on, they need to be like on it all the time. But it's not the way it happens. No. And if somebody says to you that they're on it all the time in their warm-ups, I think they're lying to you personally, because like from my experience, or not saying they're messing all the time, but like there's some days that they're on it, they're brilliant, and then other days they're not so much. And they're the days that you gotta realize going, right, these are only 17, 16-year-old lads, especially like after a Monday game. So if we won on a Saturday game, they're off on the Sunday and then they come in Monday. Normally Monday mornings, they tend to be really bubbly, because ultimately at the end of the day, because they're full time, a lot of the players are friends and they haven't seen their friend in 2 days. And I think a lot of people fail to realize that, because like if you just look at outside a player, just go to any work. If you're our age now, so I'm 30, for example, like a lot of your friends, you'll end up kind of making friends at work and you'll be friends going forward. And it's the same for them, because either their friends are still in school or they're gone to college or the university, or they're just working away, but their friends now have become their teammates and they just want to hang out and just basically just chat to each other, really. And that's why they can get it bubbly. So kind of realizing, like sitting back and looking at the bigger pictures, made me realize that going, right, these are still individuals, they're not just players, they're people at the end of the day, and you gotta kind of just slack, like, so you can't be barking at them all the time if they're not doing something, if they're not like tuning in, because other days they will be switched on, other days not so much, but we're still trying to get some bit of work done, and that's the thing. But probably the second thing I probably learned from it is that, like, excuse me, probably the second thing I've learned from it is that, like, you can't control everything. And like, I think a lot of people kind of get down about that going. So a lot of people think they can control everything, and ultimately
I'm one of those people.
Yeah. So you can't control you can't. And that's the thing. And if you get stressed over it, you're not going to do yourselves any favors. So some things for example, like our schedules can be all over shop at times. So we might have a 2-game week. And so we might have a Saturday game, a Tuesday game, and another Saturday game. So sometimes I may not be able to get gym sessions in. And COVID this time has shown to, like, you can't control that. So for example, we struggle to get some gym support into our lads at the moment, because obviously restrictions and COVID. So that's one thing I'm unable to control. But if you get stressed over it, you're going to make yourself worse down the line. So you're better off kind of realizing, going, right, I can't control this, but what can we make? Try and make the best of the situation. So, and that's the thing. That's one thing I've really taken away from it that way is how to adapt and basically make the best of situations and not have to look at the negative, try to look at the positive side of things.
And so I suppose we'll kind of, like, that brought up a load of interesting thoughts. So like I mentioned towards the start of that question, the really helpful part about having a conscientious academy coach like yourself, and I suppose leader in that kind of context, is that you are building, I suppose, those kind of that calmness, that awareness, that the kind of no panic situation, just like, it's under control, lads, we'll just manage it, we'll just respond correctly, filters into the kids as much as possible, and it will over time. So that's going to naturally help build them into better players, or better people, I suppose. Better people become better players in the whole lot. But it means that, I suppose, I look at it more and more as a career longevity situation. And where a lot of those players might go to, you want those similar values to follow them wherever they go. And be it, I suppose this goes back to the lifetime value of it. Like, so you want them all you want a lot of them, at least when they're 50 or 60 or 30 or 40, whatever it is, still involved in the game, rather than staying out of the game, you know what I mean, and getting ripped around off with it, just because there's this elitism, which is a bit mad. But those kind of approaches, and I think that kind of a calmness to it, I that's one of the things, and this is another kind of question off it, but that's one of the really nice things I had from previous coaches that I worked with, was some of my favorite ones were the most calm and kind of cool and collected kind of ones. And it wasn't that they were overly strict about things, or they were, you know, they had this unbelievable morning routine or any of this kind of BS. It was very much that they just talked to you as a person. They kind of knew, they checked it, asked a lot of questions. They found out where you were at, and then they just responded correctly rather than reacted, if you know what I mean, like you mentioned. So they have a really, really nice, calm approach to it, and it fills the player and the person then with lots of confidence and gives them a lot of good air cover to express their feelings. I found that really, really helpful. And I think that's where you're in a great position for that. And I have a feeling that those players will be much better off for that.
That's the thing, because, like, I'm not going to lie, sometimes I'm not always down. Like, I think they kind of have a go on the times, like, going, right, we got to switch on here, lads. We got a game on Saturday, switch on. Like, but if you keep barking at them, they're just going to go, oh my God, he's at us again. Why is he screaming at us? Whereas if you just take, you know, and explain to him why, going, right. Like, and one thing I've brought in recently, the idea of, it's the coach's wisdom. I've got the book by Dan John. He brought a book recently on, like, leadership wisdom.
Oh, and yes. Yeah.
I forget how many stories are in it, but basically it's like a story a day. It's actually quite good. So it's worth checking out. Basically, you read a story, and what I've been trying to do in the warm-ups recently is just kind of, not every day, like every probably once or twice a week, to tell a story or just like explain something to them. So like it was last week, I used the idea of time. So basically I took off my watch. All right, people on the podcast on the show, I literally put my watch like this, and I said, "What's this?" And then one or two of them goes, "A watch." And then the one goes, "Time." And goes, "Yes, what can't you do with time?" And if someone goes, "Can't get it back," is exactly, you can't get your time back. So make sure you come into the training ground. Don't waste your time. You come into the training ground. You come in and you're switching on straight away. We be it through your prehab work you do before you come over on the pitch, be it your warm ups to do, be it like your video analysis work you'll do with Jamie or an analysis guy on the laptop on the Max, or be it in training sessions. Or don't waste your time when you're in the building, because time goes like that. Time goes ridiculously quick, and before you know it, you realize, oh yeah, that was 2-3 years ago. So it's one thing. So it's something very simple, and I do recommend checking out the book. I think it's called Leadership Wisdom. I think it was Dan John.
I know the one. I can't think of the name now exactly, but I was only actually looking at it the other day, along with a load of other books that I want to get for Christmas. Jesus.
Yeah, it's a fantastic book. It's a great book, because it's not like a book you read just straight through over a weekend. It's basically you read a chapter. Chapters are about 2-3 minutes long, and then you put it away for next day. It's a really good book for coaches. I think I'd totally recommend it.
Yeah, and so I suppose they're huge. And I think there's a load of different ways you can go on this. Probably the first one is, have you found that now that you have you have Louisa alongside you, that you can step back a little bit and have that nearly, I suppose, a higher level approach to interaction with those lads and the group as a whole, but also trying to impact them on a more broad level than just, okay, look, we have to get your squat sorted out a bit more. We have to get this speed, da, da, da. Whereas now you're able to, and this is where I'm going to wander off into this direction, but obviously we're all very interested in sports science, and it's a hugely developmental field, and it's a hugely important field, but there's not a huge, like there's a lot of really interesting stuff happening, but there's a lot of stuff that we already know works really well. Like if you want to get faster, there's a certain formula to nearly get faster. There's biomechanics, there's some power development work, and there's general genetics and things like this at play. But, and then it's sport specific. But when it comes to social interactions and the actual psychology, like you mentioned, of how to improve that player's either approach to the actual sports science or the sport itself, and their application to it, is a huge, huge part. Because if you can get that level of buy-in on a regular basis and on a healthy level of buy-in, then you're going to be able to do all of the things you want with them, rather than just having the best sports science in the world and then having kind of half-assed buy-in and kind of, you know, it looks very very formulaic and very kind of boring, and then the athletes don't actually buy in very well. Have you noticed your approach to changing much in that, or have you always kind of been a bit like that?
I suppose probably since being over here after Masters, I've probably been always like that, because a lot of it comes down to just being a nice guy, to be honest.
And you are a nice guy, Mike, to be fair.
It is off. I don't know the best times. But
well, you haven't pissed me off, so it's not too bad.
No, like, no, good, no, okay. No. But like, it really does. And then people tend to complicate it a bit, because, excuse my French, if you're a bit of a dick or a bit of a knob, right? If you're not a nice individual in general, like, people tend to not listen to you. I find, whereas if you're a nice guy and you're actually being sincere and trying to provide value there, so all I try to do is just try to be good every day, and then try to provide value to the players. Be it, like, for example, yesterday we had a player who came in, like, and we had a game on Monday night, and basically came in yesterday, and he's quite broken up. And he's been suffering from down sure wellness for a while. Just last 2 or 3 weeks, he's been flagging up a bit. So it was just a case of sitting down and going, right, what are you doing outside? Because a lot of these players will do more outside. They always tend to do too much and too little. I find with the academy players, I found. So it's just being nice and sitting down going, right, what's going on? What's going on at home? All good so far? Yeah, all good. Right, what are you doing home? Oh, I'm going for little jogs in the afternoon, evening time. And how long are these little jogs? Oh, yeah, 5 or 6 Ks. I'm like, cool. That's fine. But probably just for the next 2 weeks, let's ease off, because you are starting to suffer in your training in regards to, like, you're coming in sore, you're coming in dummy after game. So the idea of recovery is really, really important. So the idea of just trying to provide value to them, like, and being... just kind of links back to also, like, being able to give Louisa, let Louisa cover the younger age groups, has helped me just not be at work in the evening time, so I can actually properly switch off. So then when I do come into work, I can switch on a lot easier, because, you know, basically fatigue and coaches is between the roof. Like, so if you're able to switch off at night and not have to think about work or not coach, and then when you come in the morning, then you're ready to rock. Like, so I'm not saying I would not have had this conversation before, but I'm just a bit more on and I'm realizing things, because there's things I tend to go through the cracks quite easily. So you just got to be on it. You got to make sure you're covering everything. And it was just a chat with them saying, right, what's your eating like and what are you doing outside? It was very simple. It was a 5-minute chat, me and him, just before we went out to warm up. And it takes small chats that really add up after a while. Some people think, all right, it's only a 2-minute chat. But think of that way. If you do a 2-minute chat every day for 4 weeks, it adds up to a lot of minutes, and it's a lot more caring, and it shows that you do care about the player at the end of the day, and you're providing value as much as you can, really.
No, I think I agree, and this is going to bring us nicely onto my next question. And there's probably a lot of different things we can kind of throw in, we can go into here, but one of the main things you mentioned there is the whole concept of recovery. And I suppose, is there any particular areas that you see that athletes are kind of falling down in over the last number of years, or even in general at the moment, like even at the coalface of a training session, you kind of see where they're getting caught. And even your thoughts on first team activity, not necessarily immediately where you're working, but like in general across the board, is there any particular areas that you see where athletes are struggling at the moment and continue to struggle, and how they can improve on those kind of things? Is recovery one of the biggest parts, in your opinion, or are there other areas that they can work on?
Like, I think in regards to recovery, I think sleep is a huge thing. Mm-hmm. Lack of sleep is a massive issue, and that's a big thing. Like, people always tend to go on about, like, oh, I got the skins, tights, I got the ice baths going, I got the gels and all that. But I'm like, right, what's your nutrition? Like, thinking about your sleep. Like, we live in this day and age of the iPhones, phones, blue screens all the time. And like, if you're on your phone up to 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night with a blue screen on, you're not getting good quality that night. And it's a big thing to focus on. It's a very simple thing. I, at the start of the season, we have a recovery chat at the start of the season. I always go to him, right, get out your phones, go on the settings, and turn off your blue screen, like full-time, turn off the blue screen. Yeah. You don't need it, because if you say to your players, you're not allowed to go on your screen for an hour before you go to bed, they'll say, oh, yeah, no worries, I'll do that. And they won't. They'll just lie in bed with their phone. Whereas for this, it's a bit more damage control, if you want to call it that. If you turn off the blue screen, at least you're preventing some, not damage, but they're not emitting blue light, and then they'll tend to get better quality sleep. So sleep is a big thing for myself in regards to that, recovery wise, I find. Like with nutrition as well, it's just covering the basics again. Again, there's so much information out there, but it's covering, make sure you're getting hydrated properly, make sure you're carb loading, or you're getting plenty of carbs in regards to pre-match and days for games, and protein for recovery, and then your fruit and veg as well as for protection. So like that's how I know we use it. So basically it's like fuel is carbs. I break it down. Protect is your fruit and veg, and repair is protein. That's the way we've done it. So basically it's easy for them to kind of realize, going, right, that day is a fueling day, I need to use carbs more often. That day is a repairing day, so I need more protein. So repairing day would be after games, for example. And then you got your protect, which is all together. So protect from illnesses such as colds and flus, and so your fruit and veg come in. I break it down very, again, that's kind of my philosophy and coaching in general, is to keep it really simple and to the point and make sure it's done correctly, really, to be honest.
But I really, really like that. I think that's one of the biggest ones, is I have a feeling that a lot of sports people will talk about nutrition, you talk about recovery, and they will immediately bring it to their, and we'll all do it, we all immediately bring it to our sport and how relevant it is to our sport and how our sport is different than your sport. And we do it, we require different things nutritionally, recover wise, da, da, da. Where in for the 95%, it's not exactly an awful lot different. Like you mentioned there, there's a fuel, protect, there's a repair. That's throughout sport, throughout all activities, you're going to need that mentality. And I think it's probably nearly more beneficial if we have that type of language around recovery or nutrition or whatever it is, than it's distinct. Obviously, within a particular conversation, you can have more specifics. But in general, as recommendations, that kind of thing there is absolute gold, because immediately that resonates with me, as in fuel, protect, and repair. So I'm like, great. So what day am I on today? I'm on a heavy-duty cardio day. Or a lot of running, sound. I'm going to need a lot of fuel. Right, let's rock in. How can I work to that? It's a hugely, hugely important way of approaching it, because everybody's going to be able to have a macro view rather, and then go into a more micro view from there.
Yeah, it definitely, because like I'm not a qualified sport nutritionist whatsoever or dietitian, and that's the thing, and I can't. Like I'm sure legally you're not allowed to put out like programs in regards to nutrition, so I don't do that. So what we do is give advice, and for me personally, I think it just ticks the box and just keeps it basic from the see it. And also as well, like Dabo, like our different sports, you gotta realize as well, lad, like when we were growing up, like I said, I'm 30 now, so 15 years ago when I was 15 16, it's different to 15 16 year olds now. And that's the thing people fail to realize, is like we could be covering stuff that we thought were important, we think it's important now when we were 16, whereas now. So for example, again, go back to the phones idea. 15, 16 years ago, there was no issues of having to have too much phones or too much phone screen time. And we wouldn't have looked at before. Whereas now it's a massive issue, like them being on their phones so much. And that's a big issue. And we're trying to fight it now and reduce screen times, but it's very difficult to do. And that's just, as I said, it goes back to the turning off the blue screen for me. Is one of the things that we try to do, just to limit the damage, so to say.
I suppose, and that comes back though to another question now. So I'm curious to go back and always talk, like I mentioned at the start, about our coaching experience and how we got into the whole thing. Could you talk a little bit about some of your, I suppose, some of the most impactful coaches you've had in the past, like anybody who. I give a simple example from myself. I was doing the youth certs, the FAI youth certs years ago, I think 2005, 2006, or something like that. And I remember going to it, and there was Padraig Nicholson was there, who was very high up in the FAI at one stage, and then Noel O'Reilly was there, and he was on it as well. Brian Kerr's old assistant, and really great guy. But at one stage, then we were in the middle of a five-a-side outside, and him and me are playing centre back, and I was like, "This is ridiculous! Like, what the fuck is going on here?" Yeah. And he's telling me this and this, and having the crack, and just a really genuine kind of vibe about it. You know what I mean? And I remember meeting Nicholas Cruz years ago with the boxing from Cuba, and he came to the club and stuff, and it was just like just a different world of coaching attitude, I suppose. But could you talk a little bit about some of your kind of favorite coaches from back in the day, and then even if there's a few even at the moment that you're a big fan of, could you chat about them?
Yeah, so probably in regards to coaches, like, I can't really say I have like a favorite coach, to be honest, but I've worked with some really good ones, to be fair. Like, I gotta mention two now I tend to touch base with a lot is like Henry Singh and James Farr, the guys who used to work with Sutton. Like, I try we probably don't talk as often as we probably should, but like when I do talk to them about stuff, like, they tend to bounce ideas, and they look at it from a different perspective as well, and which is fantastic. Like, one of the coaches worked with last year, like, Ross Wilding is actually working with Fulham at the moment. He just looked at things from a different perspective. He looked at it from like the 10,000 hour rule and like getting the basics right in regards to football, which is really, really important. And he, like, his simple idea is like, they gotta do the basics right before you do anything else. And I'm like it, that kind of relates with me in regards to that. But probably looking at it from like an experience point of view, and this is probably my second gem of here, is if you have the opportunity, go coach in another country. I coached in America, in Chicago, with Chandler Sports Soccer summer camps. I was 20 at the time, so this would have been 10 years ago. And it was by far the best experience coaching-wise I've ever had outside of S&C. It was unbelievable. You coach every day. You coach for 5-6 hours every day with kids running around you, and then you learn a lot in regards to how to deal with like one-to-ones, how to deal with groups, and you realize that coaching is not just about the sport itself. You gotta coach the people, and you gotta deal with parents, and you gotta do like reports, and you gotta do like presentations. So it's a big learning curve, and it's fantastic in regards to that. So I do thoroughly recommend that.
Yeah, it's funny when you talk about the in the States, and I did the same in 2007, and went over with Noga at the time, and we were staff coaches, so we went over in, I think it was end of March, until around actually now or so, I'd say it was kind of around the middle of November, end of November or so, but it was mad because we were running all of these kind of mad Easter camps, and then we were doing kindergarten work, and then we're going from kindergarten 1 week to working with academy teams in New Jersey another week and winning tournaments and all this kind of mad stuff. And like, it's just a different world. But like you mentioned, that was phenomenal learnings from it. Like, unbelievable
the amount of learning you do, because with the camps I was involved in, like, the kids come for the whole day. Like, the parents, it's like they basically drop them off. All right, some parents will stay and watch, but a majority of parents will drop them off in the morning and they'll go away and do their work and do whatever they need to do. And you're with the kids for 4 or 5 hours, 6 hours, and they have breaks. You got to keep them occupied in the breaks.
Oh, yeah.
One thing I've learned was like little tricks, little car tricks, coin tricks, little like game-based, like group-based games, all these things. And you learn a lot because you have to learn pretty quick on the job, because you go to... I'm not too sure if I do this anymore, but so when I sent to Chandler Sports, they bring over the Birmingham University in Birmingham, and you do like a weekend course to kind of just to get your idea around it. And then before you know it, you're on a plane over to America, whatever region you're based in, and you're thrown in a day or two after you land, you gotta learn the job like that. You're thrown in the deep end. And it's brilliant because you learn so much on the spot, and it's fantastic. And I do recommend, if you're humming and hawing about coaching, if you're a bit unsure what you really want to do, and you're in an undergrad, I definitely recommend going for it. It's fantastic. And you get to see America as well, because the one big thing about the challenge sports organization is that you don't stay with our coaches. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. You actually stay with host parents or host families. So like the kid would be going to the camp in the daytime, but you will stay with the family that evening. And you get a real sign up and you get a real show what American people are like in regards to their hospitality, and they're unbelievable people, to be fair. Like, it's fantastic.
I agree. We were living with other coaches kind of in the spring and in the autumn, but in the summertime, because we were going to so many different places in Long Island, the whole lot, like we were in the Hamptons for a while and da, da, da. So we had to stay with the families, and it was a phenomenal experience. Just so mad. But like you mentioned, I suppose I still take an awful lot of those ideas and games that I made up nearly on the spot. Now I would use them in my normal gym work or my normal class work or whatever it is. And that's one of the huge parts that we would have had to go through. And I think this is where we'll go to the next, and we will kind of finish off soon enough, Mike. But and this goes back to the me knowing about you in the first place is your ability to network really well, which I think I have great respect for. But could you talk a little bit about the value of networking to you? So I'll give everyone some context. So I remember at the start of the first lockdown in kind of March, I remember seeing Mike put a tweet up about this S&C group. And I remember looking back into it a bit more. And I know you'd gone for like a few coffees and stuff with different coaches in London beforehand. And then essentially kind of grown this kind of, I suppose, nearly a WhatsApp S&C kind of, it's nearly a guru group, and I don't know how I got into it, but I don't know how I'm involved, but it's literally just all these super, super serious coaches who are class, but it's a great little hub for networking and for interest and general positive kind of enjoyment of it. But could you talk a little bit about how you got into, I suppose, how you value networking and what experiences and lessons you've kind of learned over the last maybe year or two of networking, and even talking about the States and stuff like that?
Yeah, I suppose how it started really, the idea of like networking, was probably back in my master's, to be honest, just getting talking with coaches and realizing like a few coaches, like students at the time, saying basically it's not what you know, it's who you know, basically over here. And obviously I came thinking on my own, and like I was just like, right, just kind of try to meet as many people as I can. And being Irish, being the accent I have, having a bit of a cleft palate as well, so people don't understand me at the best times. So I kind of, people got to know me as the guy that they could not understand. Probably if you'd be on the podcast, I'm going, what the hell is he on about? But yeah, so people were kind of finding out about me through other people going, oh yeah, he's the guy that nobody understands. But how it worked then was when I realized that, like, and this kind of links into kind of stories when I went down, is that like, if you just been good every day and it's providing value to people, like you will build friends for life basically. And this is why I kind of got into the networking side, and I was like, it shows that it's very, very important. Because for me personally, as I said before, is that I tend to learn best by just having an informal chat. And I started with setting up a group in London. It was like London's Coaches Connected, I think I called it, or something similar around that. And then basically we've only met like three or four times, and it was just getting together for coffee. It was right bang in central London. We used to meet and just three or four times, and we just met for coffees. And it was just chatting basically, what is your living? What do I do? And we're just bouncing ideas off each other, which is fantastic. And then as lockdown came, it made me realize I actually robbed the idea from another coach, from Nathan Griffin, if he's listening. I robbed the idea off him. And then I got in touch with Will. So Will Hughes, he's based in Down Centre Sports. So I got in touch with him going, right, is there scope for some S&C for Irish coaches? Because there doesn't seem to be anything out there. And he was like, yeah, we'll go for it, see what happens, see what the crack is. I basically, as I said, I literally just put up a WhatsApp group message, or sorry, a Twitter message on Twitter's going, right, planning said WhatsApp group, everyone should, and it just exploded basically.
Yeah,
it was brilliant and it was fantastic. And since then, since we started in early March, we've been just having Zooms. So during lockdown, we would have had a Zoom once a week. And then when lockdown, when we came out of the first lockdown, then we ease it off. And this kind of happening every month, and probably a Zoom call probably every 2 or 3 months over the stage. But the idea behind it was just for our coaches to meet each other, which is the idea. And like touching base, because ultimately at the end of the day, like everyone's Irish, everyone just links automatically, and then we can bounce ideas off each other. And I find that for me personally, it's the best way I learn as well. And then I've been able to talk to other coaches in different areas. So for example, like Ryan, I was your last was I was able to talk to him like over different Zooms. I've talked to one or two lecturers in regards to on the group as well, because it's kind of an area I'd like to be looking down on, an area I wish to pursue later on down, going down the line as a pracademic, as Des Ryan calls it. So it's been fantastic just being able to touch base with our coaches and see what they do. Really, it's been immense. And I think it's very, very important for coaches to link up that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't work at high level sports or in a professional setup, essentially with a team or anything like that. But the value that I can see within it from I suppose the various perspectives, like you mentioned, from very, very high level, maybe Champions League teams or be it sports medicine or sports science or psychology or whatever it is, like and from all different sports, from the whole lot. It's been a hugely interesting thought experiment, I suppose, as well, because you can see some people, there's a huge amount of agreement on a huge amount of topics, but there's also definitely differences in approach in certain things. And that's really interesting to see where the holes might be lying in sports science and in S&C in general, and kind of where we're getting caught on it, and where people might be getting, where I think the collaboration makes a huge difference, because you're actually able to reason it out and kind of go, okay, well, look, where this actually might be worth a look at here. Okay, we'll see what the crack is with this, you know, and it does make a huge difference. But I think, like you mentioned, when it comes to having the variety of people that you can touch base with, and just the amount of expertise you can get in such a relaxed setting, it's rare to have, and in such a confidential, enjoyable kind of manner, you know, and respectful manner. It's really good.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was Tim Ferriss's 4-hour work week talked about, like, if you need to find out something relatively quick, try to contact somebody who knows the idea, who knows the topic inside out. Mm-hmm. And that kind of links back to the networking side of things as well. Mm-hmm. And, but like, yeah, so as I said, like, you may talk to somebody about a topic that you don't know about, and you may disagree for, or it may be something you disagree with, that it could be a certain, this is how you train strength. So we'll use a simple example. Some people may believe that you should do 5 sets of 2 for maximum strength, and then other people might say you might do 3 to 5. Just a simple example playing out there.
Yeah.
But like, it's interesting to talk to other people and going, what's the rationale behind using that rep range or that set or whatever? All right, I've used a very simple example, but the principle still applies, that you find out the rationale behind it, and then it makes you think, going, oh yeah, I may not use the whole thing, I may not use the rationale, but I could use it potentially for this situation. And the idea is that, like, and this kind of goes down the idea of like the tunnel vision, so to say. All right, I'm using my hands a lot here so people can't see this. So if you're looking like this in your way, this is your road and nothing else is in front except the way you view things. You can't see what's over here or what's on the outside. Whereas if you have people next to you on their roads, it tends to open up a lot more and you see what's in front and you get a better idea of what's going on in the horizon, so to say. And that's the thing. And like, people are very, I suppose ego tends to come into it a lot as well, I find. Not just in coach, but just in general. Like, people are quite, not scared, but their ego tends to go, oh, I won't ask them that question because their ego tends to kick in. Whereas you should be looking at it from a development point of view, going, right, how can I make myself better every day? Which is kind of my idea, really. So,
yeah. No, I think that's a huge one, because the likes of that group, and I'm sure there's lots of other groups like it, but it's been a hugely helpful and interesting and I think very timely, appropriate thing for a lot of people. Like, obviously, we're all going through different kind of mad experiences with within the last year or so, with different changes in circumstance, et cetera. But even just a wariness that not an awful lot of us would have been used to at any stage. Like, you know what I mean? You're in the house a huge amount, and you're used to so much general networking, we'd be with your players or other coaches or whatever it is. And then having to, like you said, scratch that itch, but having such a savage amount of really good coaches in the one spot it's such a mad thing. Like, so it really elevates everybody so much.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And if, as I said, like the idea from Tim Ferriss, the idea is that if you have a coach who's unbelievable at Olympic lifting, for example, like we got Paddy Roach in the group, like Paddy knows his Olympic lifting, like he knows his Olympic lifting. Yeah. And if you got to ask a question for that, you can just text Paddy Roach or put on the group, and he'll get back going, oh yeah, this is the way, whatever it is, whatever the question is around Olympic lifting. And like, and then you can talk to anybody else in their various topic. And it's fantastic that way. And it helps build your toolbox in regards to your knowledge also as well, which is really, really important. Like, because ultimately we're all here to help each other, and that's the way it should be. Yeah. Like, you try to provide value any way you can, really, and that's the key. And I'm just chuffed and just delighted that people are using the group the way it needs to be used. And there's no negativity, which is brilliant. And like Twitter, to be honest, I think I've gone off Twitter now in recent times, to be honest, because there's a lot of negativity since they creep in there, and I've kind of taken a step back from it. But whereas that group has been brilliant, it's just positivity, and there's articles going up, and people are just asking general questions, and then we're just bouncing ideas off each other, which is fantastic, which I'm delighted with. It's the people are using.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think the whole social media scenario is a challenging one, because there's going to be natural tendencies toward, especially the likes of Twitter is a challenging one. But if the platform is aimed at very short, sharp types of production, then you really can't. It's very hard to gain context for what you're trying to say. So unless you have this big long thread, like it was great. So Nick Winkelmann had a lovely thread the last day, and you have to go right through it, and you have to really understand it to gain a lot of context for it and awareness of what was going on, because you could have just looked at the first one and gone, okay, what the hell? And you're like, all right, I'm a bit confused. And then you move on. So you don't really gain an awful lot of awareness and knowledge from it, and you're not learning really well. Whereas sitting down and looking at an actual research paper that might not be massively relevant to my particular speciality or anything like that, but sitting down and going through the reasoning for it and being able to actually absorb that is a hugely helpful way of making sure that I can pick bits and pieces out. Like you mentioned, I might not use all of it, but I'm going to use some of it. But it's having that context for it and having the patience. Like in that group, we had loads of different people talking on different Zoom calls, and there was huge amounts of patience, but there was some phenomenal ones there where there was some really interesting bits of information that equalized a lot of us, I suppose, rather than elevated one particular team or person or whatever it was. It meant, no, well, hold on, like you mentioned at the very start, that there's not a huge amount of complicated stuff when it comes to S&C. You have to squat, you have to lunge, you have to hinge, you have to, like, so it, on top of that, then it's very contextual. And I think that's where certain platforms are better than others. And like you mentioned, Twitter's a tough one. It's fucking best of times for that. Like, it's great, but it's a pain in the ass times as well.
Yeah, I kind of find it's starting to creep in with a lot of negativity, and I've taken a step back. I've kind of taken a Cal Newport approach, this digital minimalism idea. So I've actually taken it off my phone, to be honest. Yeah, so
I did that a while ago, and I have to say, I think that was one of the most enjoyable times I've had in recent years. I'm thinking I'm going to do it again, I think, because it's not one of those ones where I just don't feel drawn to that type of interaction. I don't know. I like a bit of a different kind of a feel to it. Maybe I'm just a bit more visual. I don't know. It's a bit different.
Yeah, but it's definitely because it's a tough one, because, and then you get the idea of like the fear of missing out, FOMO.
Yeah,
you have that can creep in as well. So, but I've done this. I think this would be my third detox, so to say, on it. But I have noticed that I tend to read a lot more in regards to like SC books and stuff without having to use social media. Because a lot of times, like a lot of people go on to it, like SC coaches, for example, they go on it because they want to learn more of other coaches, which is fair enough. But there's ways you can manipulate that and you can just follow the guys. And this is where the bias tends to come in a bit, because the question is, are you really learning from it? Or are you trying to confirm your own bias, the confirmation bias?
Yeah. Are you just being entertained a bit as well? Like?
Yes. So basically, we'll go back to my example of the rep ranges. So for example, I believe you do 3 to 5, similar periodization, and you progressive overload. Done. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I follow another coach on Twitter who does the exact same thing, I'm more likely going to follow him, aren't I? Because it confirms my bias going, right, he believes what I believe. I'm going to follow him. Whereas if you have another coach who says you should do the 20 by the one set of 20 idea, which is basically you do one set of 20 reps and you get stronger, that's not my school talk. I don't really believe in that. So I'm not going to follow him. So then, and that's the question you're going to get, is that are you following the people online you like to follow because it confirms your own bias? Again, that's just me throwing out to the floor here, but
yeah, but I think it becomes the more I coach and the older I get as a coach, the more I am confident that it's a principle-based approach is appropriate, and with certain context, and nothing's going to sway me from that, because with all of the experience of different activities and different sports and different people that I've talked to and different programs that I put in play for people and seen progress from them, then it has to go back to that. Because like that, you mentioned that there's no way we can get away with 1x20 or 3x5 da, 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 with everybody. It has to be appropriate. Now, again, it's very much contextually depending on the sport, but I think where, like you mentioned, where things get a bit squirrely is when we are very much confirming our own bias. Like we are just naturally drawn to those kind of quick wins in our own head, in our own heart of like, oh, well, such and such, you know? And like even talking about the group, like I wouldn't be a high level S&C coach when it comes to a particular team sport, but I'll still throw my opinion in just because I like talking. But sometimes I was completely incorrect. I know for a fact, I'm like, look back and go, Jesus Christ, what was I talking about? But then, Other times I'm like, well, no, I've actually done a lot of this before. So I just haven't been picking paid that well for it, or I haven't been at a premiership team. I've been doing the same kind of crack.
And that goes back to the idea of like people think, oh, you're working in a league sport, you got to do something different. No, you're working with people at the end of the day and you're still coaching people. Yeah. Because you can apply the same principles. It's just because, all right, you don't have the gear on, you don't have the initials on the crest. But you're gonna apply the same principles if you're working at CrossFit, for example, and you're just doing general PT, or you're working elite sport. A lot of the principles in regards to strength training and gym training, all right, there's different ways of doing it, but a lot of the principles will apply the same.
Yeah, very much, very much. Mike, you're saying you're looking at getting into Pracademia. What's your kind of next coaching step? Do you think, are you still like, you're obviously enjoying the Leighton Orient challenge at the moment, and it is a challenge because we're back in the lockdown setup, obviously, but is there any particular areas you'd like to kind of delve into over the next few years coaching wise, or
what do you think? So probably I'd like to say in youth development, because I do and around the area of like maturation and peak weight velocity, so I'd like to do a bit more research in regards to that. So what I tend to find is that like when you look at research papers, a lot of them, you can't really apply them. You can't really apply them to the job. Whereas I would like to kind of, as I said previously, like Des Ryan, I'm not too sure where he got it from, but I heard the idea of him, but the pracademic. So basically you're a practitioner in the trenches and you're also doing research on the side. So I like the idea of being a kind of a middleman, so to say. So you're getting your research in and you're actually trying to research something that you can apply directly and coaches can benefit from. So that's the kind of the route I like to go down the line for sure.
Yeah, I think that's going to become more and more common, I think, and it's becoming more and more important, because like we talked about it towards the start, if there's a delta between the kind of the lower leagues and the Champions League, that's similar enough when it comes to the actual practicality. Like you have these other you have some coaches who are just hardcore in the trenches, and they might have fairly stuck in the mud kind of mentality or approaches to their training. But then there's huge amounts of good academic research and publications on a consistent basis that are coming out all the time that could have huge impact on the actual quality of coaching and training that you're doing. But that deciphering of it, like it's like the academia side aren't going to be overly attractive at the coalface coach, and the at the coalface coach is too busy living the dream, you know, being on the ground to really go and access an awful lot of those research papers. So that middle person and that middle ground, and that like you mentioned, it's very much about the context for it. I think that's going to be the game over the next few years, because like someone like me, I'm very interested in both of those. I like being on the floor, but I also like reading research papers. But if somebody can break it down a bit more straightforward and give me at least a bit of a push in the right direction of, okay, well, look, this one might be more appropriate for your activity. Oh, okay, well, let's have a look at some of these. And that becomes a hugely, hugely helpful way of gaining awareness of you should be taking on board, you know?
Yeah, massive. And it goes back to the idea of like providing value again. It's like, are you writing a paper just to get your name in a paper, or are you actually writing a paper to create value for coaches? And that's just a question. Very simple question.
You're built for this. You throw it out to the floor. You're terrible for this, because now you're going to keep me talking. So if you have to go, you have to go.
But that's all.
So I suppose a big one for me there is, like you said, we can start looking at how appropriate it is for, like if you're doing a publication or you're doing some research project, you want it to have some validity and importance and actual applicability in the real world. But it comes back to the challenge of how valuable it is. And you mentioned there, you're looking at creating value. What to you is creating value when it comes towards either a social media post or a blog or even a conversation like this? What's your kind of, I suppose, your context for value?
I suppose the concept of value is something you can take away and apply it. Mm-hmm. Like, it really is as simple as that. It really is. So like, you can't really put a number on it, but like a lot of the academic papers come out, it kind of tends to say, so some people go, oh yeah, this works, but we kind of knew that already. So mm-hmm. was there a point of publishing that paper in that? And like some things that don't really apply in the coaching world is, if you start to answer the real question, the hard questions, which are quite difficult to answer, I'm not saying I have the answers to them, but just the idea of like trying to answer questions that haven't been answered really is the key thing, and then be able to apply that answer to any, just in general, because I find a lot of papers come out like we kind of know the answer already, but I'm not too sure people aren't, and authors just doing it just to get their name on a paper. I'm just saying in general, there's no
mind. I think you're right though. It's actually interesting. Like on the last episode, I was talking to John Murphy, and the research that he's doing at the moment with regarding anxiety and mental well-being with adolescents and their levels of physical activity was huge, because he mentioned that obviously there's really damning statistics regarding female involvement, like adolescent female involvement in activities and sports and stuff like that. But he was very much like, I was like, what can we do about it? And he's like, there's a lot of things we can do, but none of them are easy. And they're going to take a lot more research to fix these issues. They're not as straight away like, okay, well, that's one, like, that's not the only research paper that he's going to be putting out, let's put it that way, or the only publication. There's going to have to be a lot more. And you're going to have to, with each time, there's going to be more context gained and more applicability available for it. And we're going to find more and more ways of getting that done. But like you mentioned there, there's the challenge sometimes when you look at some of those papers is like, oh, okay, well, that's great, but we kind of knew this. I was only looking at some of the CrossFit related research papers there yesterday. And I'm like, okay, well, we know that the injury rates are relative to a lot of other contact sports. So, and they're actually a bit lower, but like, we already knew this. Like, I've been involved in CrossFit for 13 years, 12 years. Like, I'm aware of what the crack is. Like, you know what I mean? I've coached thousands of hours of it, and I could tell you for a fact the amount of times that people got injured within it. Same with yourself. But I want to, I'm eager to find more appropriate ones that I can actually start pulling ideas from and go, okay, well, I can use a bit of this now, and I can actually start kind of really applying some of this, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it goes like with the rule of like, is it quality you want or quantity you want?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, that's the thing that I kind of find a lot of it out. a lot of it out there at the moment is about quantity based. Mm-hmm. And just try to get as many people out there as you can, get your name on as many as you can. Mm-hmm. But is that truly helping the coach who's in the trenches and who's on the ground?
Well, I put it this way, the ones that you've done, so you've done some research and I've looked over them and I'm like, well, these are fairly good ones. Like they're very appropriate. They're movements that the vast majority of athletes should engage in. The GA ones, for example, are hugely helpful papers that you've been involved in because it lays out a huge amount of really good takeaways that any coach, any S&C GA coach, could straight away apply for their entire season, like their whole approach. And I think that kind of thing is huge because you could have 20 or 30 different research papers out, but they could be saying like two or three of them could be okay. Whereas the likes of yourself, you've done a handful and they've been phenomenal. Like, you know what I mean? They've made huge, huge progress and they would stand the test of time because they have such good quality detail and such good principle-based approaches that you can really push on with and you could use and read regularly and gain from more and more.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that part. I really do. But like, if you look at like, we've done a hurling one. So I did it under Chris Bishop and Turner Fairness, and they really helped me a lot with these papers. So like, a true thanks to them at Middlesex lads up there. So the hurling one and the football one, if you have a read off from any SC coach, a lot of stuff you know already. And it goes back to the philosophy I believe in, is just keeping it really simple. Like the periodization program, the periodization is a simple periodization model inside it. Like the gym sessions are really basic. It's a squat, it's a hinge, it's a push, it's a pull, it's a press, it's a row, right? The programming is so simple. But again, it's the idea is that they may be able to get one or two bits, like in the needs and asks section, for example, they may be able to pull two or three things from it. And that shows that they can apply it. And if they can't, basically that's happy for me, so at least they can apply it. And then like I've done like two kind of core exercise ones, so I did a pallet press one and a dead bug one, and again the idea is that like to make sure they're doing the exercise correctly, it's a very simple one. It goes into the journal strength conditioning, it's under exercise technique, and again it's just provide value for people. That's all it is for me personally, to make sure they get something out of it.
Yeah, but I think that's hugely helpful because like you mentioned that there could be there's a huge amount of potential Instagram coaches or whatever it is that are throwing bits and pieces up and they're just like very flashy, which is fine to an extent, but like they might be saying lots of different things in the context of they have to do for the likes or for the perception of it. They want to just throw out something that is a bit sketchy maybe or whatever. Once you actually put a bit of detailed research into it though, you can make huge progress from that because again, it goes back to having that good structure and that good science-based approach to all of this makes a huge difference to the actual validity and longevity of the value of them, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Like, and it's great having like social media, and you can bang out things quite quickly. Like, I could do a tweet in literally 5 seconds and put it out there. But ultimately, like, what's going to stand the time really is the thing. So are you better off focusing on the quality of papers? And I'm not saying my papers are high quality, by the way, so far from it. I've a lot to learn in that area for sure. But the question got asked of like, are you willing to kind of put a bit more time into it and do a bit more research around it? So it's a quality paper going out, so then people can get something from it. Or are you just doing it just to get your name in it?
Mm-hmm. I think that's where it comes back to is what's important to you as a coach and your principles and your approach, which is the key to it. Mike, I won't keep you for much longer. Where can people get in touch with you? So you've got a few different projects kind of ongoing.
I suppose, yeah. So probably Twitter. I don't even know my Twitter account. So I'm not too sure. I'll have to look at it. I think it's just Mike Milan. I think it's M Milan. That's my Twitter handle, I'm sure.
I'll link it up.
Yeah. So on Instagram, but I'm not. I have an account, but I'm not really. I tend to do a lot of my work through my website at the moment, so stoicstrengthcoach.com. So it's a blog linking SSC, minimalism, stoicism all in one. And I tend to throw up some like SSC recommendations as well and stoicism recommendations. So feel free to check that out also as well.
Sweet. So folks, if you want to get in touch with Mike, I think it's a hugely helpful, helpful dude to chat to about all of these things. So if you are a fan of stoicism and minimalism, he's meant to connect up with and have a chat with. Mike, I really, really appreciate you taking the time. I know we went on a good bit here, but I think we got some good stuff in there. So I appreciate you taking the time out of your day, dude.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure. And guys, if you want to reach out, just give me a message. Just shoot me a message on Twitter and I'll get back to you and we can meet up over Zoom. No worries at all. Just let me know if you have any questions. Let me know.
Great stuff. Well, thanks a million, Mike. I appreciate it.
All right, everybody. So you've just been listening to episode number 61 of the Humble Coach Podcast with Michael Milan. So first of all, folks, I want to say a massive thank you to Mike for joining me on the show today. It was a really, really great chat and great to get a chance to talk to Mike in a bit more detail about some of his ideas and some of his experiences. So thanks again, Mike, for taking the time to join the show. Secondly, folks, I want to say a massive thank you for all of the continued support of the podcast. It's really, really appreciated, and I'm just looking forward to bringing lots more really interesting guests and shows to you guys over the next while. Finally, folks, if you want to check out any of the previous episodes on the Humble Coach Podcast, like I say always, you can go to our home base on podbean.com. You can also check us out on Spotify and on iTunes and pretty much wherever else you get your podcast from. So, folks, thanks again for joining me today on the Humble Coach Podcast, and I hope you have a fantastic day, and I'll chat to you very soon.